Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. This is the Deep Space Nine discussion panel reassembled, and we're doing something a little different tonight. We're doing an episode called Our Trip to Tangent Town. We're going to be going off a number of tangents. We got a bunch of questions to ask each other, and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. But as I said, this is the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, so I am not alone. First up, joining me this evening is Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
Fantastic, man. How are you?
I'm good. Cold, but good. As long as my furnace keeps working, I'm okay. next up, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Oh, good. Hello, everyone.
And last but not least, we have Richard. How's it going, Richard?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm almost one truly deep, and I'm ready to get down to Tangent Town, boys.
Excellent. And as I said a couple episodes ago, we're going to do add some filler episodes, as they used to say back in the day, for the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, because our next show we're going to talk about is Enterprise, and I'm only, like, I don't know, four episodes in, into my rewatch of Enterprise 20 years later. So we need to pad this out so we give ourselves some time to get reacquainted with Enterprise. So for this episode, this was Curtis's idea. We're going to do Trek questions, for each other. Doesn't necessarily have to be about Deep Space Nine. It could be about anything in general. So since this is Curtis's brainchild, I'm gonna let Curtis kick it off first. Curtis, what do you have for us first up for tangents?
Tangents?
Or for us to take our trip into Tangent Town.
Okay. So I do have I've cooked up a pretty good question here. I could put forth the question and you'll lead the around the table.
Yep.
Segment? Okay.
Absolutely.
So my question was, if there were a Mel Brooks parody of Pick Your Series, I'd like to think TNG would be a popular one, but I'll leave it up to the answerer. Mm-hmm. If Mel Brooks were to do a parody, what do you think, there are any particular actors that would play any particular crewman on that series? In the Mel Brooks parody, in the fashion of, you know, Princess Bride, Robin Hood Men in Tights, Spaceballs, this kind of thing.
Now, I have one question here. Are we talking about actors that were relevant at the time the show came out, or actors that are still relevant now?
Either or. Your choice.
Okay.
The world is open to possibilities.
Interesting. Okay, well, all right. Well, so, Curtis, since it's your question, what are you thinking? Like, lead us off with who you would pick. And you're thinking TNG?
I was leaning towards TNG. Now, I'll admit, I hadn't completely fleshed out my own answer to this question. But it was something I was thinking about, and it was kind of fun. And I was like, hey, I should ask the boys what they would think. Give me just a minute to hit up Google here, because I can't remember the actor's name.
I have a great pick for DS9.
All right, Ragnar, kick it off, buddy.
This is my pick. Let's say they do a parody or even a quasi reboot, something like that, of DS9.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Coleman from The Walking Dead and also from
The Orville.
The Orville should be Sisko. He was also in The Expanse, and he was really good in The Expanse, too.
You know what? Speaking of The Orville, I'd like to see Seth MacFarlane do Odo. That would be super cool. I'm not going to lie. Like, also, if it is a parody, like a satire, I'd really like the actual space station to be in the shape of a bicycle tire.
Okay.
See, that's good, too. Deep Space Nine, the station, is kind of a character in the show. That works for me. I'll take it.
Yeah, I like that.
I would go, like, if we're going Deep Space Nine, Gilbert Gottfried as Quark.
Yeah. For real.
The one thing Star Trek's been missing all these years was absolutely Gilbert Gottfried. Oh, if I could pick someone to narrate my life in a movie, it would be Gilbert Gottfried.
All right. Here's the next one. We got, I would say, Dave Chappelle as Worf.
Oh, the possibilities.
Right? Maybe he'll actually be funny.
Okay, what do you think about this one? Leslie Nielsen as Gul Dukat.
Oh, buddy. Oh, that hits me right in the feels. I love that.
He's so good at that, like, stone-faced seriousness while doing satire, too.
Right?
He's
right.
Perfect. Yeah. The Naked Gull, 22 and a half. I can see it.
Gull Dukat in the 22nd and a half century.
All right, so for myself, I think I would select, and I'm going to try and pronounce this, but I'm three beers deep already, boys. Mandy Patinkin.
Oh, yeah.
As Data.
And who is that? I'm drawing a blank.
Mandy Patinkin is Inigo Montoya.
Inigo Montoya.
Kill my father. Repair
your at that age.
Princess Bride.
he went on to be a pretty good actor in lots of other stuff, too.
Yeah, it's just he definitely doesn't look like that anymore, though.
I got one.
Not at all, but let's say circa... whenever the hell Princess Bride came
80, out. 88? 87?
1993?
87 it was, yeah. Well, I was only a year old, so pardon my bad memory.
All right, I've got one. Okay, who's that really annoying, terrible female comedian, the blonde one?
Nikki Glaser?
Could you be more specific?
I don't want to guess and out myself, but Eliza Schlesinger?
No. She actually had some funny nonsense.
She was hilarious, but her new stuff.
I can't remember her name. She's like the... Amy Schumer. Amy Schumer is Kai Winn.
I don't know if she's... Fletcher ever hears this episode, she's going to find you and beat you down.
What? Why would...
Which, by the way,
why would Elijah Schlesinger... Because you know what? Elijah Schlesinger as Kira would be funny.
Louise Fletcher would find you. Down for share her character with Amy Schumer.
You're right. Ugh. She probably will. And please forgive.
If we're doing a pilot episode for this, you got to bring in Grand Nagazek, Wallace Shawn as Captain Picard.
Oh, I could get down with that.
You know what? Also, if we're doing TNG, I'd say Kevin Costner as Riker.
Nice.
Because you can't have like a reboot of this or like a Mel Brooks style without some Kevin Costner action.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I guess. Even though Mel Brooks is Robin Hood totally mocked Costner's Robin Hood,
and it did so very well.
It really did.
It did.
I don't know who the actor who played Little John was, but I'd love to find a role for him in Star Trek.
Wasn't Dave Chappelle one of those?
He was, yeah. He was Achoo.
Achoo?
Yeah. His name was Achoo.
Achoo.
Son of a sneeze, yes.
Remember when they're about to get in the fight and he has to stop and pump up his shoes first?
Oh, the 90s.
Okay, here's a DS9 one. The guy who played Randy in Trailer Park Boys as Wei Yun.
Yeah.
I just watched a clip of him being the premier of your province, and it was pretty freaking awesome. He still did the whole thing with no shirt. You just had a tie.
Side by side, and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
It was uncanny. It was uncanny.
Yeah. Glad I'm not the only one who knows that.
All right. Do we got any more before we move on to our next question?
Well, I'm sure we'll think of more all night, but
yeah. Oh yeah, if you think of something, just throw it out there. All right, Ragnar. First up on our trip to Tangent Town, what do you got for us?
Well, mine's a little bit more long-winded and then a little bit more serious than where we just started.
All right.
Okay. In an imaginary world where they got to do another season and make that season be the proper ending of the series, how would you have ended the series? Doesn't have to get super crazy specific, just broad strokes.
For which series, sir?
DS9. Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Because the ending we got was really forced and rushed and didn't feel like it was what the creators actually wanted to do for an ending, and felt much more like, well, we found out we've been canceled, so let's just spend the season wrapping up loose ends.
So, well, rewriting season 7, essentially?
Yeah, or if there was a whole other season to play out and build towards a different ending, what would that ending be? What would your dream ending to Deep Space Nine be?
Okay. Richard, you go first. What are you thinking?
Well, that's a bit of a tough one because I'm already, like, sort of inflicted or conflicted because of the documentary that Ira Stephen Bear did. So there's some good ideas there. I'd like to see Sisko come back, but retire from Starfleet and focus completely on retirement and building, you know, a home on Bajor as he planned to do, because that's what he wanted to do. And then also focus on, you know, where the station is going in terms of, like, you know, what does Kira do? When essentially, because she's going to take over, I would imagine she would take over the station command. And then, of course, some throw-ins for Worf as the ambassador to Kronos. And then, you know, see where Sirik Lofton's Jake Sisko life takes him. I think that would be pretty cool. I'd need a lot more time to sort of, like, flesh that out, but I think that'd be a good place to start.
Curtis, your thoughts?
I've been thinking in a mad panic, and I don't have anything yet.
Okay.
I'm back. Oh, yeah.
Okay, maybe this was too complex a question.
No. For me, like, I agree with Richard. I'd love to see Sisko come back and all that kind of stuff. I would like to see, like, because the whole mission of Sisko in the beginning was to bring Bajor into the Federation, so I'd kind of like to see that happen. Also, I'd like to see, like, the aftermath of the Dominion War. You know, like, what happens to the Dominion in the Alpha Quadrant that is left? Is there,
border skirmishes?
Yeah, like, is there going to be any, like, rebel factions of Dominion that maybe didn't get the orders, or maybe they were cut off and, you know, they're still fighting? Maybe.
Yes, actually.
And also to see the, you know, like, Cardassia, like, maybe, you know, focus a little bit on Garak and his rebuilding and him having to basically reinvent himself, right? You know, he go from being, like, a spy master to an outcast to a war hero. Like, to kind of see him, like how it's all going to fit in. Go ahead, Curtis, but your thoughts.
Jeez, it's really hard to come up with stuff when you guys are spewing out all these cool ideas. I don't know. Honestly, maybe I'm the outlier here, but I don't think I would change much. I didn't like the final scene between Sisko and Dukat. That always, I don't know, it just didn't really sit right with me. I don't know what I specifically would do different, but the final battle didn't really seem grandiose. There wasn't a lot of gravitas, you know? But I honestly don't know how I could have done it better, so maybe I shouldn't criticize too much. And the final scene with Cassidy, that always just left me kind of bombed. Maybe that was the intention, but you look at the end of TNG, and it's a lot fuzzier, you know? Yeah. The captain walks in, and they're all playing poker, and he sits down to join him and says, I should have done this ages ago, or whatever the heck the line was. And it left you with sort of like this feeling of conclusion, which we didn't get with DS9, really, I don't think. We didn't get with Voyager at all. And I'm not even going to talk about Enterprise yet. It's disappointing on a whole other level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of anything offhand that I would have specifically done differently, but I know what I wouldn't have done.
Well, like with my suggestions, like I wouldn't do anything differently. Like, I'm just thinking like season 8. Like, this is what would be done in addition to what's already happened.
Well, on one of the points that you brought up, is there still factions of Dominion out there still fighting? Yes, there's that faction that comes through the wormhole 40 years later.
Yep.
You'll recall Sisko asked the prophets to stop the fleet or whatever.
Yep.
What happened was they were put forward in time 40 years. And then in Star Trek Online, you as the player have to do all these things to convince them that the war is over and it's all good. So there's definitely some more that could have been explored, but you'd have to play the game, or perhaps there's some canon novels out there that contain it.
Yeah.
But there's so much in STO for like conclusions to a lot of different all the series, really.
That's cool. And that's actually going to be a topic for a future one of these episodes, is unresolved storylines from Deep Space Nine that we would like to know. But anyway, Ragnar, what are your thoughts on your question?
Okay, so the reason I came up with this question, and maybe it was too big of a question, maybe I didn't pose it correctly.
No, it's fine.
Many years ago, probably about 2016, I got really baked with my friend who also loved DS9. And we had this like 2-hour long conversation about if they brought the series back and what could they do. And so I found my notes from that. And so that's where I got the idea. So the concept we had is, you know, it's been whatever, 20, 30 years, however long it's been since the show went off air. Mm-hmm. And suddenly Sisko comes back. And he's the same Sisko of the same age, but everybody else is, whatever, 30 years older, and the whole landscape has changed. So the Ferengi Empire is in ruin. Bajor's now joined the Federation and is a very different planet. Worf is his own starship captain. O'Brien becomes an instructor at Starfleet Academy. Bashir goes on to run Section 31. Kira becomes the president of Bajor. We never figured out what should happen to Dax, because I for the longest time didn't like Ezri Dax. I think the actress is fine. She's actually quite cute. I just think that when they killed off the character, they should have just killed off the character and recast a new character to take that role instead of trying to shoehorn her in.
Agreed.
So yeah. Jake, of course, goes on to become a famous writer. Nog also goes on to become a starship captain. Odo convinces the changelings, instead of trying to become like an empire and an empirical force, but instead to become more like a force for good. And they go to struggling planets and try to help them. And then we always thought it would be super cool, the Borg show up. And that's why Sisko comes back, is because the Borg are threatening to enter the wormhole. So that was the idea that my friend and I came up with when we were super stoned about if you could bring back a DS9 season.
Yeah.
At least those are the things I wrote down. We talked for 2 hours. I'm sure we talked about more than that.
No,
I can speak to some of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's really cool, like some of those concepts. But go ahead, Curtis.
Some of it's pretty close. So, spoiler alert, y'all been warned. All right. So, Kira does become Kai. But nice. She ends up stepping down as Kai and remains a member of Starfleet because Bajor does indeed join the Federation. And I believe she ends up a captain. I could be incorrect. But yeah, she does become Kai and then later steps down, which is weird because most Kais, I would imagine, probably die in office, right? Like, Opaka. But Opaka didn't die. She actually did bring peace to that little moon. And in STO, you get to go and bring her and all those soldiers back. It's pretty cool. What was the other thing? Worf does become ambassador to the Federation on Krotos, so that was bang on. And there was one more, but I can't remember. I've been rambling for a while. I'm going to shut up anyway.
All right. Yeah. No, that's very interesting. Like the Borg aspect, I like that because, you know, Sisko never really... Like, I guess, like, in the pilot episode, he learns to let go of his wife and resolve his issues with the Borg. But I always kind of wanted to see him go against the Borg again. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
But, excellent. Excellent question. All right, well, I got one for you guys. So, out of the Roddenberry / Berman shows, so this is... the original series, TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. Who is your least favorite Star Trek crew member out of all those shows? Who's the crew member, like, out of the main cast? So the guys that are guys and ladies that are in the main titles of the show, who's your least favorite character out of them all? For me... It's Counselor Troi from Next Generation.
Hmm.
So, and it's not, and this is where I'm coming from. I got nothing against Counselor Troi. You know, I got nothing against Marina Sirtis, the actress. I think she's just fine. But why do we need a counselor on the bridge of the Enterprise? If she had been a science officer, I could understand that. But to have a counselor, I know it's like an 80s thing, you saw like counselors on a lot of different shows, like Growing Pains, and I can't remember if the Family Ties, if he was a counselor. But anyway, I know she's there to advise Picard, but why? You know,
because she's a lieutenant commander.
Well, but why is she a lieutenant commander? That's the thing. What is her Starfleet experience? She seems to be completely inept when it comes to anything on the bridge. You know, like in the episodes
of command, correct?
Like in Disaster, she knew nothing. But why does she have the rank of lieutenant commander? I don't understand that. And why is she point. Why is she walking her like counsel like one of her nicknames that I've heard referred to her is Counselor McBoobs. Like she walks around like don't get me wrong, as a you know teenage kid, I liked looking at her cleavage. Like it was pretty impressive. That being said, why is she walking around with her cleavage hanging out? Like, you know, like in a counselor perspective.
She actually addressed that in an interview. She said in the pilot, she was in a normal uniform.
Yeah.
And she was this sort of brainy, science-y chick, who I think was her original role, was to be more brainy and more science-y.
The role of smart person.
But then somebody had this idea conflicting that, and the cleavage came out, and when the cleavage came out, Troy's intelligence actually went down. So I think it started out as one thing, and then somebody had a change of heart or whatever the heck happened behind the scenes that we don't know about, and Troi just sort of became this plot device with cleavage.
Well, I've heard that as well, but I've also heard and read various different places that Gene Roddenberry was kind of a poon hound, and... You know,
he lived through the 70s. Come on.
Yeah, he liked his eye candy, and in another interview that Marina Sirtis did she said, like, even though, like, she, I guess she used to go to their house for Christmases because, you know, Mae Jo played her mom and so on and so forth. She said even then, Gene was always, like, flirting with her inappropriately, right? Because he, you know, and I can just imagine, like, you know, he's like, I want to see some titties. I need titties on my bridge. And, like, when you hear some of the concepts, and, like, I know Ira Stephen Bear did an interview when they were talking about the episode Captain's Holiday that Ira Stephen Bear wrote. And he's like, you know, when he met with Gene Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's like, I want women and kissing women. I want men kissing men. I want, you know, I want cum. I want this. And Ira Stephen Bear's like, holy shit. Like, what is this? And then he went to Rick Berman, and Rick Berman's like, don't worry about that. You know, that's just Gene. So,
wow.
So I'm thinking
dirty old hippie sex party.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, like, that's the reason why she's there. But just from like making sense type of thing. Like, why? I never understood. Like, I would have preferred Troy be like a science officer, because that's something that I guess Worf kind of was in the first season until Tasha died.
Well, and she was the only blue shirt on the bridge, and that's something I kind of noticed. DS9 was the only one other than TOS that it really had, like,
a real science officer.
Well, I guess Enterprise had to Paul, but there was no science officer on the bridge in Voyager, which is extraordinarily weird because the Intrepid-class starship is a science vessel. And, well, Janeway, frankly, should have been wearing blue.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Janeway's background is actually science. She was a science officer. So, but, like, yeah, I just...
Well, we saw Beverly Crusher wearing blue as a captain, so we know that it can happen. I don't know.
I just wish they would have did away with the counselor thing. You know, had her be a science officer. Have her have some credibility, you know. And like I said, it's not a knock against the character, not a knock against Marina Sirtis. I just wish, you know, they'd given her a little bit more... this is going to sound bad, but a little bit more meat, I guess, of, you know, in terms of her
background. I think she feels that way, too.
Yeah, I think so.
That's the impression I get.
Yeah. But anyway, that's my pick for least favorite character. And like I said, nothing against her. So let's go around the table. Curtis, your least favorite character from the Roddenberry Berman shows.
You know, this is going to make me sound so terrible. It's kind of a toss-up for me between... I feel bad even saying it. It's a toss-up between Geordi LaForge and Chakotay. Now, once again, nothing against either actor. I enjoyed a lot of the episodes that LeVar Burton directed. I enjoyed what he did with the character he was given. I wasn't big on the character. And with Chakotay, it felt like they really pigeonholed him into this, like, extremely stereotypical role.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, really, like, two-dimensional, I guess, but not, I don't know. If I have to hear him say Okucha Moya one more time, I might punch a baby. That's all I'm saying. it's kind of a toss-up between those two for me. And with Geordi, I just, the poor guy and his never-ending saga of, like, oh, I'd like to get a woman, but I can't because reasons.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt a little... He felt a little underdeveloped. Like, for how many Geordi-centric episodes there are, I don't feel like we got to know him or his backstory very well at all. Like, okay, he's a blind dude. Somebody out there thought I was going to say black. No, he's a blind dude, and that's like it. What else do we really have?
Yeah, like, I guess originally, like, kind of like Troy, you know, his character is really underdeveloped. Like, he was just, they had this idea of, let's have a blind man pilot the ship. Because originally he was, you know, the main pilot for the Enterprise in the first season.
Was, yeah, he was the con officer, wasn't
so,
he?
Yeah, so I guess they're trying
to... Brian.
So, yeah, I guess they're trying to go for irony, I guess, but And then season two, they made him the chief engineer, which I thought was great. I never understood why they didn't have a chief engineer. You know, just like they didn't have a science officer.
It's they
like,
did. They had
they
that.
They did. They had a couple, actually.
Yeah, they had. They had
Argyle, and then they had the, I think there was a woman, and then there was somebody else.
Yeah, there was a guy, and then, there was a lady. She was the first one. Then Argyle, because he, and then there was another guy. But,
we only saw them in the episode where Wesley took over engineering.
Yeah, that was the lady one. And then Argyle was when they went with the Traveler. And then the other guy, was it when the Klingons took over engineering? Was that when we saw the other one? But anyway, what I mean is they didn't have a chief engineer like on the main cast. You know, kind of like they didn't have a science officer like they did from the original series. Ragnar, who would you like to, or who's your least favorite character from the Berman Roddenberry era?
So, Berman Roddenberry era is up to Voyager or up to Enterprise?
Enterprise.
Okay. Oh, I absolutely cannot stand. I can't think. Yeah, the character's name right now, the security guard, Malcolm Reed on Enterprise.
Malcolm?
I can't stand him.
He's the army officer.
I think he's terrible. His character sucks. He's not good at his job, and he's not interesting. He's my absolute least favorite part of Enterprise so far. Now, I haven't finished Enterprise, but I just don't like him. At all, they brought in season. I think it's three. They brought in the army guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this army dude, that guy should have been the chief of security. This Malcolm Reed guy is useless. He can never hit anybody. He can never beat anybody in a fight. He gets like taken advantage of and surprised all the time. Oh, he's terrible.
Well, to be fair, and I don't know how. Yeah, you're far enough. To be fair, he did come up with what would eventually become the Red Alert Protocol.
Yeah.
I like that about his character, but I don't really know much else about his character other than he's got like the military ego. That's about it.
Yeah, no, he's probably my least favorite main cast character.
All right.
I'm just gonna throw it out there anyways, the first thing that came to mind was Michael from Discovery.
Yeah, that's why I didn't. That's why I said
I'm so glad.
Low-hanging fruit is what that
so
is.
Glad.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Because, we'd all be picking, like, Picard people or Discovery people.
Yeah.
Richard, who's your pick for least favorite main character in the Berman / Roddenberry era?
I'm just kind of going through and... Honestly... I like Geordi, you know, and if it's Geordi and so on, like, and I like Malcolm Reed, you know, he's a very interesting character. I don't know if there's anybody on Enterprise that I'd really dislike, you know, in the first couple seasons of Deep Space Nine, I didn't really care for Dr. Bashir. And when we saw him in an episode of TNG, he was like tinkering with something on the Enterprise, and Data finds him in engineering or something. I didn't like him then. That was like my first like, oh, who's this guy? And I don't know. I grew to like him, and eventually I did. But overall, honestly, my least favorite character of all time, Dr. Pulaski. The Gorgon, as we call her.
Ooh, good call.
She was rude. She was condescending. It took me a minute to like remember her because I kind of blocked her out a bit.
totally understandable.
I mean, the acting, I guess, was okay, but I don't know. She just gave me a really bad taste in my mouth, and I don't like her at all.
Like, for me, I didn't mind Pulaski, but, again, I think it was a Roddenberry thing where they were like, you know, when they got rid of Crusher, you know, they're like, well, let's, you know, we need another Dr. McCoy, but let's make her a woman, you know, and that's basically what she was. So she was like Dr. McCoy as a woman, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, she, you know, she was being rude to Data, but, I mean, it was in the spirit of how Dr. McCoy used to call Spock, you know, you pointed ear at Hobgoblin or whatever, right? Like, it was kind of like that, but it didn't really work for her. Like, it worked for them, I think, because it was the 60s, and I think Roddenberry is still kind of stuck in the 60s. Like, he, you know, like, he didn't evolve, really, right? But, yeah, I know she didn't really like it either. So I think that's one of the reasons why they went back to Crusher, is because Diana Muldaur didn't want to come back. Like, she didn't really like it either. But
works for me.
Yeah. So Richard, now it's your turn to steer us into Tangent Town. Question or tangent you got for us?
I got three questions, like everybody else. They all have, like, sort of a different category. And my first one, this is just, like, this is an easy, like, you know, an easy in kind of question, because the next one's a biggie. But this one is, which role, excluding the captain, would you be best at performing on a starship? So, like, you have engineering.
Wow. I had that question, too, but I'm glad you did it.
We have, like, science roles and navigation operations. I guess first officer, counselor, quote unquote. What do you think you would be best at on a starship, in the entirety of the starship?
With what we, like, with who we are right now. Like
with what you would like to do on the ship. Like, I may not be an engineer at this moment, but I think it would be totally badass to be a chief engineer on a starship. Okay. That kind of thing. And then maybe give a little bit of backstory, a little bit of as to why you believe that would be a good fit for you. Basically, it's an interview question.
All right. Because I'm kind of, like, originally my thought was, you know, as I am right now, what would I be best suited for? And definitely engineering, because that's kind of what I do now, in the sense that, like, I'm not a certified power engineer, but I do power engineering work in real life. So, okay. So that is essentially what Geordi and them are, right? Like, they didn't make the Enterprise, but they know how it runs. They know how to fix it. They know how to troubleshoot. They, you know, and that's essentially what I do where I work. So, yeah. For me, as of right now, I would probably be best suited for engineering, but I would love to go the. I would love to be a pilot. I would love to be like, you know, Riker or Geordi or Picard. You know, all three of them are pilots. I would love to pilot and eventually lead to command. Like that, I would love to command a starship one day. If I was actually, you know, in that universe. Curtis, your thoughts on Richard's question?
Well, it's a heck of a question. I had a very similar one, so I'll try and sort of combine my answers here for the sake of brevity. While I too could eventually see myself, you know, taking the mantle of captain, I tend to have some leadership qualities, not a lot, but some. I would almost definitely end up working at, now, does it count if I say Jupiter Station?
Yeah.
True. Because I'm a structural iron worker by trade. What I do is I build things out of metal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, as far as just what I'm already good at, working at Jupiter Station makes the most sense. Other than that.
Or any, like, actual space dock, like, and shipyards.
Yeah, but it's the first one that came to mind. So, I mean, that or, you know, I've always kind of fancied myself in the ops position, if I'm being honest. You know, doing Data's job on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
You need some sensor readings? I got that. You know, you need some transports initiated and you don't have time to call the transporter room. I'm on it. You know, my creator sent out a subspace signal and I need to hijack the ship. I can do that too.
Yeah, with like a 95-digit password that nobody could have ever broken ever.
Right? There was a lot of sevens in that number. That's all I remember.
I love that episode. That was so cool.
Yeah, I don't know. If it was anything, I always saw myself in ops if it had to be on a starship. But really, I'd rather be building stuff.
But you would rather be Data but not Harry Kim.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'll make everyone happy to learn eventually, Harry Kim does get captain. And it takes him like 30 years, but he does get there.
And at that point, Nog is a Grand Admiral.
Probably.
Vice Rear Admiral of the entirety of Starfleet, Nog.
Yeah.
So part of my question was going to be, which member of the crew would you excel at being and which would be a challenge? For me, the biggest challenge would be Chief Medical Officer. I've got a strong stomach. I can bandage a wound if I need to. I can suck it up in the moment, but long term, no. I couldn't deal with that day after day. I couldn't mentally handle losing patients, I don't think.
I agree.
You know, that would be a mad struggle. Mad props to our healthcare personnel.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't do that shit straight up.
Yeah. No, and that's cool. Like, yeah, like with your question and Richard's question, it actually works out really well. I'll agree with you on that. Like I take first aid at my work because we need first aid, but I know like we have advanced first aiders at work as well, and they've asked me a few times to do it, but I won't do it because like I like in a pinch, you know, I'll do what I can, you know, but if I gotta like, you know, if there's blood and guts and stuff, like I'm better being the guy that runs and grabs, you know, clean towels and stuff like that for the advanced first aider than actually being that guy, you know? And yeah, like you say, props to our frontline workers. Cause I can't do that. No way.
Well, and you got to think like if you lose somebody or if someone has to get amputated because of you, how do you like, I would have to, I don't know how I would deal with that guilt, false guilt or not, but like that's got to be tough to deal with.
Yeah. But all right, Ragnar, Richard's question and then Curtis's question. What are your thoughts?
Okay. As a kid, I always wanted to be more like Worf, like a chief of security on a starship. As an adult, there isn't really a job that's anything like what I do in the Federation. Now, they must actually have people that buy and sell and negotiate trade, but we never see or really barely even hear about it. And every ship probably would have to have a quartermaster, but again, we never really see or hear about it. So I'm going to modify the question slightly and pretend that instead of serving on a Federation ship, I'm serving on a Klingon ship. And then I want to be the cook.
And I did not say Federation ship. I did just say Starship, I believe.
Oh, sweet. Well, then
I
want to be the cook on a Klingon ship because I can throw raw worms at people all day long, man.
Yeah. I can take this, this living worm and put it in a bowl. There you go.
Throw it at you. You don't like it. We fight. Good times. Yeah.
So what role do you think that you would have a challenge with?
Probably any like engineering or science job because I'm not particularly good at math. And I'm good at mechanical stuff, but computerized stuff and heavy math is not my specialty. So I probably would be the least happy and least successful in a very technical position, like chief of engineer or science officer. Mm-hmm. I'd be good. Like I said, I'm good at mechanical stuff, I work with my hands. I'm an artisan. So that part of it, like literally fixing things, I would be good at. But anything software or like that, nah, forget it. I'd be terrible at it. Get everybody killed in an instant.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I've been thinking about Curtis's part of the question, and I was thinking to myself, as a kid as well, I always thought that I would want to be a chief engineer type or chief of security type or even operations type.
Nice.
But really, I would like to be like some kind of like fighter pilot, ship pilot. Like pilot would be badass as all hell.
Yeah.
I just love the idea of it. Unfortunately, piloting a starship in Star Trek is a little bit lackluster than what I had imagined in my brain.
Yeah.
You just get yourself a Delta Flyer, bro. They got joysticks.
Yeah, honestly, I would love to, like, I would pilot the Delta Flyer all day long. And then, like, if we couldn't do that, then I would honestly, I'd be happy in operations. I'd be happy in engineering and chief of security. But I would probably get really bored if I was in, like, astrometrics. You know, like, charting courses like that, and like just, I don't know, astrometrics just seems kind of boring to me. It's really cool for me right now to like learn about different planets and learn about the universe, but for some reason in Star Trek I feel like I would just get bored in astrometrics. There's not a whole lot going on, and like I'd have no problems, like I would be a medical officer, I could do that. I have no problem with blood guts, and like as long as I know that I'm doing my job correctly and somebody dies, I can handle that. It would suck, but I can handle it.
Yeah, and that's the thing we got to remember too. Like in TNG, like the medical stuff isn't as graphic as it is for in our world right now. Because I remember in that episode in season two with Dr. Pulaski, it's the episode where they got the computer virus and they have to go into the neutral zone and the Romulans and all that. It's when the Yamato blows up. Anyway, there's that one crewman that's got a broken leg, and the one nurse or whatever, Dr. Pulaski tells him to use a splint, and he has no idea what a splint is. You know? Because they have all the tools where you don't even have to, like, open anyone up. You just, everything's done, you know, non-invasively. So I guess medicine isn't as bad. But, I mean, you would still see blood and guts, though, eventually. Like, you know, during a Borg attack or something. You know, something's going to blow up. But, anywho. All right, so, Curtis, that was your second question?
A variation of that was going to be my second question, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's go with Ragnar. What's next up on our trip to Tangent Town?
Okay. If you could sit down with any character, I'm sticking with DS9 because this was the DS9 podcast.
Okay.
And I wrote all my questions in advance based on DS9. So, sure.
No problem.
If you could sit down with any recurring character from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and like in an evening, and have a couple of drinks with them, who would you pick?
Recurring character, so like none of the main characters.
Yeah, yeah, not a one-off character, but any character who's appeared in more than like multiple episodes. So main character like you can pick Garak if you wanted. So for me personally, I would love to sit down with Martok and just pound some drinks and hear all his crazy war stories, and also about how much he adores his absolutely horrible wife.
Excellent. I'm going with what you said, Ragnar. I'm going with Garak. Because, you know, even if he's telling you lies, it would still be interesting as all hell to listen to. So, you know, and then you're always left wondering, is that the truth? Or is there some truth to anything he said? You know, Like, I think I would be like Dr. Bashir. I'd be so fascinated to hear anything that man has to say. So I'm going with Garrick myself. Richard, who would you go with?
Well, Curtis and I have already had a chance to, like, essentially sit down with, like, Nanau Visitor and Rene Auberjonois, so I kind of got that feel. But as characters, I don't know if I'd take either one of them. I would take the female changeling, because she's been around for thousands of years
and
lived thousands of lives.
You could ask her, like, what the hell went wrong with the Herc? Because she's the one who created the Herc. That'd be some cool shit.
Yeah, could you imagine, like, learning about the Herc, which is so closely tied into Klingon history?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be really cool. So, yeah, female changeling.
Interesting pick. Interesting pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curtis, your pick.
Wow, what a world of possibilities with that question. Holy smokes. Can I name a runner-up and then my pick?
Yes. Heck yeah.
Okay.
Runner-up would be Weyoun. I don't know. He's like the close right hand of the founders, right? Like he seems like he's got the biggest in, and I'm sure that if you could find a substance that actually got him drunk, because Vorta are immune to most toxins and alcohol is in fact a toxin, I'm sure if you found something that could get him drunk, maybe he'd spill some cool beans. But if I really had to pick one, I would sit down with Jadzia Dax.
Nice.
I think she would have some of the coolest goddamn stories you're ever going to hear.
I think you're right.
Like, you want your Klingon angle? Got it covered. You want the sciencey stuff? Got that covered too. You want some, like, philosophical insights? Got it. She just would have this wealth of knowledge and, like, this supremely unique perspective on any subject. I don't think you could get bored having a drink with Jadzia Dax.
I wouldn't get bored looking at her, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I mean, come on now.
I know.
You ain't up to Jadzia Dax and you know it. Come on. I'm not either. Don't take that as anything too bad, but you know.
Doesn't mean I wouldn't give it my best.
Hey, man. I would not blame you at all. I'd wingman for you.
Hell yeah.
Excellent. All right. So, the next question I have for you guys on our trip to Tangent Town: what would your ultimate holodeck / holosuite program entail? What would your ultimate holodeck or holosuite program entail? I would just love the holodeck, just for the sake, you know, being able to be a superhero. And of course, like, I'm a huge He-Man fan, so I would love to you know, create a He-Man holodeck program. And then I have a secondary question. The secondary question is, and I'm asking for a friend named Will Riker, is having sex with a hologram considered cheating? Because he just recently married Counselor Troy, so he's wondering. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Is having sex with a hologram...
Well, first, what's your ultimate program, and then is having sex with a hologram cheating?
I mean, ultimate program is really hard to pick. One of my favorites is actually from Voyager, when she goes, I think it was Janeway, yeah, it was Janeway, she goes back and meets Leonardo da Vinci, played by John Rhys-Davies.
Yep.
I always thought that was a pretty sweet program. I may be biased just because I like John Rhys-Davies so much.
Didn't he play Sala in Indiana Jones?
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, yeah,
dude, you know, I love that actor.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Gimli in Lord of the Rings.
Obviously, but I grew up like with over Sala, 6 feet you know?
Tall. Yeah, he was Sala. Yeah. So I think I'm going to pick that program, but I mean, man, that's brutal, because there's, like, you could pick anything.
Any like, fantasy you want.
Anything.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'll go with that one, but like, man, that's a tough question.
So, and then the secondary question, is it cheating to have sex with a hologram?
Well, by today's conventional standards, I'm going to say yeah, because your intent is still to, you know, be involved with somebody outside of your supposedly standard monogamous relationship. If you're in a relationship, if you're in a relationship that's open, no, it's fine. But I think if you're not telling your partner and you're sneaking off to the holo suite to bang some hot thing, I would still consider that cheating.
Yeah, but, I think
it kind of depends on what the relationship is. Yeah. Also in the future, who the heck knows what the rules on monogamy are in the future?
Yeah.
Is it really that much more than like a really advanced kids cover your ears? Is it really that much more than a really advanced fleshlight?
Yeah.
Point? It's a non-person.
Yeah. No, but like, you know what? Your girlfriend or your spouse barges in on you going at it with the fleshlight. Maybe that's not
mine cheating. Would laugh at me.
But I feel like
you're still going to be in for right.
The other person's feelings need to be taken into
account. Yeah, you're going to be in for a very weird conversation, I should think.
Are you kidding? Mine would take a picture and fucking talk to you guys.
Blackmail your ass? Nice.
I actually asked my wife about this, and she said, yeah, like, in her mind, it's, like, no different than, yeah, like, a fleshlight or a vibrator or something like that, right? As long as the other person knows about it, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it, you know.
I mean, it could be a cool way to explore other parts of your sexuality without actually hurting or betraying your partner. But I think your partner would have to say, like, yeah, that's cool, go for it.
Yeah.
Well, anybody in any kind of, like, decent relationship would take their partner's perceptions and feelings into account.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And why wouldn't you just bring your partner with you, and then the two of you could do all sorts of crazy things without actually doing
it? Bring it on. That's rock.
Right?
We in the 2020s, man. Let's do it.
Well, I'd be interested to hear what Rich has to say on this.
Yes, Richard. What are your thoughts?
You know what? I'm a gamer. I do a lot of gaming, and I think that it would be really badass to incorporate that aspect of things. Like being, I know that a lot of the situations you could call like gaming or puzzle games, but I think that some of the games I play now would be insanely cool to be in a completely immersive VR. Like I play a game called Sea of Thieves, and essentially you're a pirate, and I think that that would be awesome, and I would love that personally. Like if I could be a pirate in like the Sea of Thieves and, you know, have all of the abilities that, you know, you have in the game, that would be totally badass. And on the question of is cheating, is sleeping with somebody in the holodeck cheating, that's a complicated question. But for me,
but it's not somebody though. I get it, but I disagree that it's a person.
You're essentially having sex with light, like it's hard light, right?
Well, the thing is that humans eventually, and most of the time, will attach emotions to that. Hmm. So
rock hard light, you know what I'm saying?
For me, honestly, I would find that like I don't think I would like it. Personally, if I was on the other side of that, my solution, because you know relationships are hit and miss, my solution would be I would just date or you know sleep with multiple random holodeck characters and just not have a relationship. But that's just me.
Well, and that's the thing, like that's kind of like what Jordy was doing for a while. Like he kind of had it right. It's like you can. Just date hologram chicks and
he kind of didn't have a choice either.
Yeah, he was striking out. But yeah. Yeah, dating a hologram. It's interesting.
Well, you can make so they retain memory, right?
Yeah.
The Doctor in Voyager had an entire family. Janeway did it. You know, like that kind of stuff, I'm sure it happened. I'm sure Barclay had many, many an encounter, if you know what I mean.
Well, and that's actually the reason why I thought of this question, is because I watched that TNG episode, like the first one with Barclay, when he had, you know, had all those hologram, all those holodeck programs with like the crew, and then they walked in on him, and I'm thinking to myself, that guy's totally fucking Counselor Troy and Dr. Crusher in those meadows, like he's totally banging them, like he has to be, and
oh yeah,
so. You know, like, if Counselor Troy walks in, is it, you know, is it a violation of rights? I don't know. Like, you know.
I given the DS9 episode where Jeffrey Combs played that alien who wanted a hologram of Kira.
Yes.
I think there would have to be some sort of establishment of, yes, you have some sort of rights over your own likeness in a holodeck.
Yeah.
Like, if it was a privately owned holodeck, I could see it. If it was, like, Starfleet recreating something for, like, judicial purposes or something, then sure. But,
or training of some kind.
Yeah, something like, you have to at least give your permission, you know?
So, Curtis, what are your thoughts on this? What's your ultimate holodeck program, and is it cheating to have sex with a holodeck?
I'll address the first, or the latter, because it's a shorter answer. I personally would lean towards no, but like I conceded to Ragnar earlier, I think, yes, you should take your partner's feelings into consideration, because everything is very much subjective.
Yeah.
And in that regard. So if you and your partner agree that it's fine, then it's fine. If your partner would be made to, you know, some people can't help but compare themselves, you know? So if you did something that made your partner feel inadequate or inferior, then I think that does cross the line into a realm that could be considered cheating.
Unless... And that
you made your significant other feel a certain way, and why would you want to make them feel that way? Go ahead.
I'm just thinking, unless it's a hologram of your partner. Hmm?
I still think that if you were to be a truly honorable and faithful significant other to someone, you would at the very least discuss it with them.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great if they were like on a business trip and they were away for a few weeks and you had the option to, you know, have holodeck fun. I think that one or the other couple would take that as sort of like a compliment. They're like, hey, yeah, you know, this is my likeness. This is, well, you know, whatever.
Not everybody takes everything the same way, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
All right. So the first part of the question, Curtis, what's your ultimate?
For the first part of the question, man, what a toss up. The runner up would be, my favorite game of all time, World of Warcraft. Just because I've spent so much time in that world already, I don't see why I wouldn't spend more time in it. Would I be given the opportunity to actually step into the shoes of one of my characters? But the ultimate for me, first place, no question, hands down, Lost.
Nice.
I would totally want to be in that, on the island, with the smoke monster. I don't care. Let's do it. Let's get down.
Yep.
I would love to be Lost.
That would be cool.
There's a
million reasons that I could give you, many of which are probably best saved for when we cover Lost on the podcast. I don't know. There's just something about one of John Locke's lines. One of my favorite lines in the whole show is, on this line, or on this island, it doesn't matter what you did in the past. Here, everybody gets a second chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, who wouldn't embrace something like that in that same situation? It's really, I don't know. It just has so much appeal to me for many reasons that I'm sure I will extol the virtues of when we eventually cover Lost.
Excellent. That's a good answer, because I too love Lost. That would be a cool program.
Ragnar, we will convert you, buddy. Don't worry.
Got my eye. Well, there are things I like about Lost. John Locke, I love him. But as a whole, I got some serious beefs with that show.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to going over every single one of them in painstaking detail with you, buddy.
I bet you are. It's going to be fun.
Hey, if I'm wrong, I'll stand corrected, but I think I can make a believer out of you, bro.
Well, we'll see what happens, man. It'll be interesting.
I can't wait.
Richard, take us further into Tangent Town with your next question.
All right. So this one's kind of a big one. This covers specifically DS9. During the 7th season, I believe, Section 31 and Sloan infect Odo with the changeling virus, essentially an attempted genocide for the greater good of Starfleet and the Alpha Quadrant. Now, do you agree with that or disagree with that? Why or why not? And as sort of a secondary to that, what do you think would have happened had the Founders found the cure and weren't even affected by it? Like, what do you give a short story of what would have happened if that war would have continued full force?
All right. Curtis, your thoughts on Richard's question.
Captain Picard faced exactly this dilemma when it came to Hugh. And he determined that they would be no better than the Borg if they did as they did. And I'm siding with Picard on this one because it's really hard to be on the wrong side of morality when you side with Picard. Just saying. I'm with him. I think that no matter which way you slice it, genocide is not the appropriate response. Could you please repeat the second part of your question? Because I got thinking real hard on the first part and I kind of got distracted.
So the second part is what do you think in a short format? I know it's difficult for a short story for you, Curtis, but if the Dominion had found the cure and the war had continued on as normal, quote unquote normal.
When did the Dominion find the cure? Because that will have a bearing. Because I believe that the female changeling was infected for the majority of season 7, correct?
Yeah.
I'd say somewhere near the beginning so that it wouldn't have had a super massive effect on it.
Wait a minute. Odo was infected when Sisko went to Earth, and that was well before season 7.
No, that was in season 4. That's when he was initially infected. And then when he joined with the shapeshifters on their homeworld at the end of season 4, that's when he infected them.
Yes, when they turned him into a solid, correct. Yeah,
but it took some time for it to actually happen for the infection to run its course, I guess.
Okay, but at the very least, they didn't realize there was an infection until probably season 7, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, so when are we saying that the Dominion found the cure? Have been presumably after they discovered the infection.
Yeah, I'd say shortly after they found it, I guess shortly after the beginning of season 7.
Okay. So the Dominion cures the disease early in season 7. Sisko has taken back DS9. The prophets have returned. Minefield's down. Jeez, I'm just trying to remember what was going on with the war at that point. I believe the Dominion was on its back foot.
I think so.
I think they probably would have been just sequestered on Cardassia. And I don't know. Would Kira have been so bold as to lead a resistance right to Cardassia Prime if they knew that... Now, hang on a minute. Did the Federation know that the Founders were infected when they sent Kira in? Jeez, there's so much I don't know in order to answer this question.
Yep, they knew.
Okay, well, in that case, I think the Federation would have eventually prevailed, but it probably would have cost a lot more deaths because that female changeling was just not having it.
Yeah.
And the only reason she relented was when Odo said he would cure the link. Now, assuming that they had cured it already, that leads me to believe that she would have gone down to the last Jem'Hadar, the last Cardassian, the last Breen, the last Vorta, and finally herself. I don't think she would have stopped. I think she would have made it as painful as possible. But eventually the Federation would have triumphed.
Yeah.
She would have gone down guns blazing.
Which is what she said on the final episode, that she was going to make them... I forget how she worded it, that she was going to make them pay for every... I can't remember how...
It would be so costly that something. Yeah,
it would be so costly that their victory will taste just as bitter as defeat.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Curtis on that one. That's my stance. And what was the second question? I kind of forgot.
That was the second question. The first question is, do you agree with genocide?
Genocide. Okay, well, I'll jump in because I agree with Curtis for the second one. And as for the genocide, I hate to say it, but I agree with what Section 31 did. You know, to quote Mr. Spock, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right? And the few are the founders. They're just one group of people, and they themselves are contemplating genocide. Like, the reason why I say that is because we as the viewers see both sides of the war, right? They're like in the season 6. I think it was episode 6 when Dukat and Weyoun are basically talking about like how they're going to divide up the Federation after they've won, and Weyoun says, you know, we need to destroy Earth. If there's going to be any resistance, you know, it's going to be there, so we're going to eradicate Earth. And that's when Dukat's like, you can't do that. Like, even so, I mean, Weyoun is cool with genocide. Like, he's down for it. So, like, you know, and I know, you know, they say, like, with the Picard, you know, Picard thing, you know, like, we would be no better than them. But you got to consider the billions of people that are going to be killed, you know, by the Dominion. Like, the Dominion is definitely the greater evil, you know, and it's not necessarily genocide, like... It's more of a threat of genocide. Because, I mean, they had the cure. So, you know, like... I would just kind of hold... I would basically do what Odo did. Just kind of say, like, hey, we got the cure. Stop killing us. Go home. Leave us alone. We'll give you the cure. And then, you know, it would have been settled that way. But I completely understand why Section 31 did it. You know, because ultimately it's a numbers game. You know, it's kind of in my mind, it's really no different than what Sisko did. You know, by him and Garak killing Vrenak. Like, I know Sisko didn't kill Vrenak, but Garak killing Vrenak. I mean, Sisko put Garak onto this. If they hadn't done what they did, the Romulans would never have entered the war, and they would have lost. But a lot of Romulans died because of what they have. Their choice, right? But it was for a greater good. But anyway, that's just
from whose perspective, though.
From the good guys, I guess. I don't know. Like,
but good is a little bit subjective in this case, isn't it? You've got two opposing sides.
Well, I would argue that the Federation is definitely the good guys here because it is the Dominion.
Well, of course, they're the protagonists of the show, right? But I mean, according to the Dominion and their own,
they believe in order
structure and... of morality. They think they're the good guys.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit subjective.
Oh yeah, it's totally subjective. Just from my perspective. I would side with the Federation on this one.
I totally get it, but that's just one of the really cool things about Deep Space Nine. It's like it invites discussion and thought on, you know, how the other side feel like a little bit.
It really makes you think, unlike current Star Trek, which is so fucking brain dead that you don't think, right? Kill everybody. Like, that's what Michael Burnham does, right? But I'm not saying that that's what they should do. But anyway, I went off on my own little tangent here. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Oh, I'm pretty much just going to agree with what you've just laid out. Don't really have too much to quibble with there. I mean, yeah, morally it's kind of a pickle, but I think you're right. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. So I'm going to just second what you've said, because I don't think I could say it any better than you did.
Well, thank you. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, I'm more in line with Curtis on this one, because I put a little bit of thought into the question when I formulated it, and I said to myself, at what point do we become the evil that we seek to destroy? Mm-hmm. Is it worth becoming evil in order to destroy evil? And in my personal perspective, it's not worth becoming evil. And that's just my perspective. I know that this war is going to be terrible and bloody, but at the same time, whether they're the good guys or the bad guys, do you want a billion lives on your hands?
No. Well, it's more than that, too. It's more than just the war. The philosophers would talk about, like, universal suffering. What reduces the greatest amount of suffering in the universe? You know, is it maybe everyone just lays down their arms and lets the Dominion steamroll them? Does that lead to less suffering? Or does fighting back and losing all these lives ultimately lead to less suffering? Who can really say it? But, I mean, that's part of the equation, too.
Well, one thing I find interesting, and I'm going to use a different analogy, like what you just said, Richard, like about, how'd you put that again, about evil, becoming evil to stop evil?
At what point do you become evil when trying to destroy evil?
Okay, so another analogy that I could use is Batman and Joker. You know, Batman will not kill. He will not kill, right? So he captures the Joker, they take him away, and then he gets out again and kills more people. Where, like, maybe Batman should have been evil that one time and just put a bullet in the Joker's head so future people won't die.
Oh, but then he wouldn't be Batman.
Yeah.
Are we really going down this road, boys?
Then I think he would just be Vigilante Man, and Batman's just not like a killer, like he's there totally for justice. Yeah, but he's more about justice than just being, you know, a vengeful vigilante.
His version of justice.
Yeah, yeah. His version of justice. Because to me, it'd be more just to get rid of the Joker to save lives. You know, but anyway, I digress. All right, so next up, Curtis, I believe it's your question next.
Okay, I've got an interesting one, and I need you guys to bear with me for this. This is going to be outside of your comfort zone, perhaps, and I don't know. I this is something that I always talk about with the girlfriend when we watch anything, and okay, I'm just going to ask the question. All four of us, being, as I know, heterosexual men, no judgment if you're not. In your estimation, who are the more attractive males on the shows? All the shows. Rather, the four series that we're accustomed to dealing with, the TOS, TNG, DS9, and Voyager, and Enterprise. Five shows, my bad. I can't count. Who do you guys think are the most attractive males to the ladies? What do you figure?
Hold on.
To the ladies.
Just to clarify.
Well, I don't know. Riker seems to be. Personally.
Or just overall, like, if you had to guess, which characters would have... Okay, I'll go so far as to say, which characters would have the most sex appeal, in your mind, out of the male characters, if you had to guess?
Well, I don't...
I'm not saying which one do you want to take to dinner. I'm saying, you know, put yourself in the shoes of the female audience. Who do you think holds the most sex appeal, coming from your male perspective?
My male perspective, I got a perspective as in I know family members who have the hots for Commander Riker. Like my mom had, you know, she thought he was all kinds of sexy. Still does.
Yeah, my mom too, man.
And
well, he's tall as hell, though. I mean, come on.
That's not even fair. And I remember, like, this was a few years ago. It's when, was it 2011? When he was in Calgary the first time. And I met him, got my picture taken with him and stuff. And then I think I was at my sister's baby shower. And I was telling my cousin Wanda about him. And she literally, like, you know, like when someone, like, kind of gasps. Like they like and they're like short of breath. That's what she did, just at the mention of Jonathan Frakes, because she has that much the hots for him. So I would say Riker, and I would say Shatner, because again, 2011 when he was in Calgary, I ran into a old schoolmate. She was there also to get her picture with Shatner. And she was like, oh, he was so handsome. And, I mean, he's old enough to be her grandpa. But yet she still was, like, in awe of how handsome he was.
Right. He did a tour around then, an evening with William Shatner. I went and saw him at the Shaw Conference Center that year, I think.
Excellent. Yeah, no, he was at the Calgary Expo when I seen him. Mm. Definitely Riker and Kirk. Those are my... And I've heard people have a thing for Spock, and Data. You know, and I've heard that of, you know, but I would think for me, like in terms of who, you know, from a male perspective, I guess who would I like to look like? I guess would be one way. And Riker, like with the beard, and you know, the the way he like hurdles chairs and stuff, I think is pretty cool. So I would want to be like Riker, I think. But anyway, Richard, your thoughts on Curtis's question.
You know what? I'd have to say Trip, Charles Tucker III, from Enterprise.
That's two questions you've answered, starting with you know what? I'm gonna need you to move on to honestly.
And honestly, you're right. Spock and Data as well. But also Jake Sisko.
Sirach, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a handsome dude. Actually, my sister said that.
I got that impression, too. We met him in Vulcan the one year. And hey, he strikes me as someone that... some women could call handsome for sure. Absolutely.
My sister said that, like when she saw my picture with him, she's like, he turned out to be a really good looking man. I was like, pretty handsome guy. Yeah.
Well, and they're always smiling in the pictures, and that man's got an excellent smile.
And he's super nice. Super nice guy.
He really was very accommodating for us. Yeah. And, Anna Hattay, who wanted to photobomb us.
Yeah. Yeah. She was cute. Ragnar, your thoughts on Curtis's question.
Okay, well, it's kind of a weird question.
That was the point, buddy.
All right. Now, my guess would probably be Riker, because I know that my mom had a big thing for him back in the day, or Trip, because he just strikes me as the type of guy that the women would love. But one of my best friends, Sin, has the biggest crush on Jean-Luc Picard. Mm. And she just starts pretty much drooling over Patrick Stewart at the drop of a hat.
Oh, he's got that commanding presence, though.
Yeah.
The accent.
Yeah. She's got a real thing for him. And the other one that I've heard is apparently when the show was, like, on television, women went nuts for Data. And apparently he got more raunchy, X-rated fan mail than anybody else on the show did. And apparently the women that like Data a lot. That's just what I heard. I don't know.
Well, that caught me off guard. I'm not going to say it's surprising, because that would be incredibly rude to Brent Spiner. And he definitely does a fantastic job.
Yep.
Programmed in multiple techniques.
Yep.
That is not the answer I thought I was going to hear. But good for him anyway. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So
Curtis, what's...
I don't know, man.
What's your answer for your question?
Well, it's been mentioned a few times, but Charles Tucker III strikes me as someone that, you know, I could see him getting a substantial line for autographs at a convention, if you know what I'm saying. But also Captain Archer. He's got that sort of, I don't even know how to describe it, but he's got a certain look about him, sort of like an Indiana Jones kind of thing going on, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
In contrast to Charles Tucker III, Charles Tucker III has this like almost baby-faced sort of thing going on. Not quite baby. That doesn't really come out right, but.
And he's like a nice Southern boy too.
He's like a football jock, I guess, kind of. Whereas Archer's got this like rugged adventurer sort of thing going on with the lines in the face, and I know that's you know, not the character, that's the actor, but still, those two always kind of struck me as the type. But also, believe it or not, Michael Dorn playing Worf, he's got height, he's got the physique, you know, that always sort of. A lot of girls dig an alpha. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's just sort of got, well, all three of them really have that whole thing going. But, yeah, those are probably the three for me that I would, if I had to guess, you know, it would probably be those three.
Yeah, I could, well, with Michael Dorn, I remember showing another female cousin, a picture of what Worf looked like without the makeup on. It was like a publicity photo of Michael Dorn, and she was like, "Wow, he's hot." She's like, "I did not think he was that hot underneath all the makeup."
I'm not too far off the mark here. That's good to know.
Yeah,
and he was also a fighter pilot.
Yeah,
well, trained as a fighter pilot.
And he was a bouncer too, I want to say, and football player, and yeah,
I was. If I can just jump in for a sec, I remember when I was watching DS9 with my ex, the episode that's set in the 1940s about where Sisko's a writer,
yep.
And you get to see Michael Dorn just as Michael Dorn. He's like the baseball star or whatever. I remember Joelle never really cared about Worf at all until that part. And then she was like, whoa, who is that? And then from that moment on, then she had a thing for Michael Dorn and Worf, but before that, as a Klingon, she was like, yeah, he's Klingon.
You know what it probably is? He smiled as the ball player.
Yeah.
The man has got a charming smile on him. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was. He kind of turns around at the bar and does this big smile, and I could just feel her melting. It was crazy.
See, chicks love to smile.
Yeah.
All right, Ragnar. What's your next question on the road to Tangent Town?
Okay, this one is not super exciting, but if you had to go into a combat scenario and you could only bring one weapon from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine universe, what weapon would you pick?
Can you define a little bit more the combat scenario?
Well, I was thinking not ship to ship, like person to person.
Hand-to-hand combat?
Yeah, hand-to-hand combat. I mean, you know.
I can tell you right now, I'm going in with a mechlith. Let's go,
brother. See, that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, if you have a mechlith and the other guy has a phaser rifle, you're screwed.
I'll just throw it. But I mean, yeah. if it's that kind of like, if it's hand-to-hand combat, I'm going with a mechlith. If it's like an Overwatch type thing where you're just like shooting at people, then I would take a Cardassian phaser rifle.
Nice. Well, if it was hand-to-hand, no firing, I would also take a mechlith. If it was involving shooting at people, I don't know. I like the classic Klingon disruptor pistol. They look real cool, but there probably are better weapons out there.
I don't know. I would go, I want to say Batleth, but I also like, I don't know what it's called, that Jem'Hadar weapon where it's kind of got like a wood bottom to it, and you can kind of swing it like a, maybe like a hammer or a bat, but it's got the metal, you know, razor thing on top. I'm not sure what it's called, but I would use one of those.
Oh, it's almost like a halberd kind of thing?
Yeah. I know it has a name, but I can't think of it. But for hand-to-hand, I would use one of those. But if we're using phasers and so on, I think, what's her name? Oh, well, I can't remember her name, but, that Romulan disruptor that, what's her name was using.
Oh, yeah.
In the search part one, that looked pretty badass.
It's called a Kartokan.
The Jem'Hadar weapon?
Yeah, it's essentially a short pole arm with a straight edge blade and the stabbing point.
Yes, that would be my hand to hand. Yep. And then yeah, Romulan disruptor, for sure.
And I'm just gonna jump in real quick. As cool as a Batleth looks, upon further analysis,
well, it'd be a useless weapon.
It's a completely useless weapon. However, the mechlith is a much more viable and feasible weapon in hand to hand combat.
Oh yeah.
The sword that Duras uses during the fight between Worf and Duras would have actually been a better weapon and would likely have won had Duras been a better fighter.
Yeah.
That was pretty badass, that sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. A Batleth is a cool weapon, but it's like ultra stylized and ritualistic. So if you have a Batleth and your opponent has a Batleth, or your opponent has no weapon at all, it's going to be a pretty cool weapon. But if you have a mechlith and your opponent has a Batleth, like, you're going to win. If you have a spear, you're going to win. If you have a really good stick, you're probably going to win. Like,
it really would be
just more of a ritual weapon, you know, than it would actually be a practical take this to real war weapon. In my opinion, anyways,
I was gonna say, haven't we seen like a Doctog beat a Batleth, or at the very least, capably defend against one?
Oh yeah,
yeah, oh yeah.
So Curtis, what are your thoughts on this? What's your hand to hand weapon, and what's your weapon powered weapon?
Well, I was under the impression that we just had to pick one. Sorry, please go ahead.
Well, maybe it should be pick one that can shoot and one that can't.
Oh, well, that brings a whole new world of possibilities. I don't know. If I had to pick just one, it would be the mechlith.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if there's going to be some kind of goddamn dampening field or some kind of shit that makes the particles scatter weirdly, you know. I need something reliable. And the only thing that's really been reliable in the Star Trek universe is a sharp blade. How can you go wrong? And the mechlith has lots of virtues, as evidenced by Richard actually sent his to a guy. What's that dude's name?
Skallagrim. I'm actually going to post the link in the chat here. Give me a sec. I'm just pulling it up.
So there's a YouTuber who reviews weapons. His name's Skallagrim. I think he's out of British Columbia.
I think he lives in BC now, yeah.
Yeah. So Richard sent him his Mechleth, and he said he'd never even bother with the Batleth because it's, as we know, garbage. But he extolled the virtues of the Mechleth and really kind of sold me on it. Someone who was already a fan. But, you need reliable. You need something that's not going to run out of juice, something that's not going to be messed with by some clever Jadzia Dax science officer in the sky on a ship somewhere. And, like, if I had to defend the albino, it would be with a Mechleth, not with a phaser. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I'm a fan of the in-your-face, let's-go, toe-to-toe kind of style. You know what I mean? Like, who can put a crosshair on who faster and better is not impressive to me. Like, if you can outwit me hand-to-hand, all right. You can... I'm fine with you killing me. That's an honorable death. Don't be a coward and shoot me. I'm all about that, Mechleth.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I chose that Jem'Hadar weapon is because it, like I said, it's got like the wood staff at the bottom. And I can't help but think, like, you know, talking about like swords and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm, you know, a fan of Game of Thrones. I would definitely carry around a warhammer versus a sword. Just because, you know, like I play ball, or I used to play ball. I still do a little bit. So I'm good at swinging a bat. And I think that Jem'Hadar weapon, like, I could get, like, a good swing on it and be able to do some real damage, right?
Well, it's got that weight so far from your grip. I can see how you'd, you know, take advantage of the leverage for sure.
Yeah, to me, it would be like a warhammer, sort of, only bladed. So, anyway, yeah. No, cool question.
And the Kartokan would definitely be better than the Batleth. Straight up.
Well, and you always want to slash, not stab. You stab, that's how you lose your weapon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Batleth just looks cool.
I'd have it on my wall for sure.
The Batleth, even like when they did The Way of the Warrior, and you know, watching Dax swinging it around and like killing all those Klingons, like that was pretty cool. But again, yeah, like you guys say, not really practical. But Dax, and
if you were gonna force me to pick a ranged weapon, I would just take that Klingon Doomsday cornucopia looking thing that like blew up planets and stuff. Nobody said it had to be handheld.
We did say in hand to hand combat situations.
Yeah, and I chose the Mechleth, but then there was also the suggestion of a ranged weapon.
I'm a really big fan of the Cardassian Disruptor rifle because it's just like an AK-47. It just shoots. You know?
Yeah.
The Federation phaser rifle is just like too complicated and it would break down. And I just want to shoot.
Gets faked by Romulans all the time. It's a pain in the ass. No, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So my last contribution to our journey to Tangent Town. If done properly, unlike Star Trek Picard, what character would you want to see further explored in a movie or TV miniseries?
Oh, Jesus.
The Further Adventures of Captain Worf.
That is exactly what I was going to say right now. I would love to see, because it's established now in Star Trek Picard, in this continuity, that Worf was last in command of the Enterprise-E. When Picard left the Enterprise, apparently Worf was serving as his first officer at the time, and he was given command of the Enterprise. So I would love to see the Enterprise-E under command of Captain Worf, and I would love to see maybe some familiar faces, like maybe First Officer Geordi. You know, Wesley Crusher as chief engineer, maybe. You know, you could even bring in maybe some Voyager characters, maybe Tuvok as chief of security and tactical. You know, maybe Dr. Crusher would still be, you know, crushing it on the Enterprise-E. I don't know. But, yeah, I would love to see Worf show. And I would love to see the Enterprise E, which I wanted to see in Picard, but those bastards never did it. Anyway, I told myself I wasn't going to get upset over Star Trek Picard. All right, Ragnar.
It's like saying you're not going to slide on a lacy road.
Ragnar, hey, well, your thoughts.
Well, other than my aforementioned blurt out about the further adventures of Captain Worf, now obviously this is never going to happen. I would have loved to have seen them do Star Trek Picard, but make it not suck.
Me too.
You know, I like the idea you had about that it ends up, he, you know, Jean-Luc Picard dies at the end of the first season, and then they name the ship after him, and it ends up being a whole new Star Trek series about a whole new ship exploring space. I think that could have been really cool.
That was Kevin's idea. That I won't take credit for that.
That was Kevin's idea.
Yeah, that was Kevin.
Pardon me. Credit to Kevin. But man, what they did was just. It was, for me anyways, most of it was unwatchable. It was just so poorly written. There were some cool ideas.
Yeah.
There was a couple of cameos and mentions that were neat. But as a whole, it was just so poorly written that it was almost unwatchable for me.
It literally was just one large hole.
Like, it just, none of it actually makes sense. None of it felt like Star Trek, and they did what they did in the Hobbit movies, which is they made the main character become a background character in his own show.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts when you're watching the Hobbit movie where you're like, oh yeah, there's that Bilbo guy. I haven't seen him in a while. The movie's supposed to be about him. And same with Picard. Like, there was lots of parts where you're like, oh yeah, right, I forgot Picard's in this.
Yeah.
It was focused on all these new characters that we didn't give a crap about.
Yeah, and they turned a respected, valiant character into a simpering old man. A fool.
A bumbling old fool.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Just terrible.
Yeah.
So anyways, I
just don't know why Patrick Stewart went along with it. Like, you know, but unfortunately,
I think they sold him on the idea of the show. And he never read the scripts. I think they just told him, we want to do a show about Picard, and the Federation's changed, and this, and we want to make it about the refugee crisis, and like, they sold him on all that, and he's like, wow, this sounds really cool. And then he committed to it, and then they started shooting, and he must have read the script and been like, oh, guys, this isn't good.
Well, no, he read the script because he was actually in the writer's room. Like, he actually was involved in the process, yeah. But the problem is, just because you're an actor and just because you played this character doesn't make you an expert on that character. It doesn't make you a writer just because you're brought into a writer's room. You know?
Yeah.
It's like everyone keeps saying, Gene Roddenberry's son, he's an executive producer on this, blah, blah, blah. If you've ever watched his documentary that he did, he himself admits he was not a Star Trek fan. And he kind of throws it out there that, you know, being the son of Gene Roddenberry's opened all these doors for him. You know, it's not like he is some visionary himself. He's not. They're just using him for his name recognition. Which, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, I had such high hopes for Picard. Like
so excited.
When he showed up at Comic-Con, what was it, 2018? 2017?
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is so fucking awesome, you know. He's going to be the next Star Trek series is going to be about Picard. You know, and even the first couple episodes, I was like, it might be okay. You know, like they're building a mystery here. You know, what's going on with this Borg cube? Well, you know, what's the Romulans up to? And then you find out not really anything. It kind of nowhere. And the Borg cube, you know, like, it's like, what the fuck were you guys doing? It's like, you guys had all these ideas and no one actually.
You put Picard, Data, and Seven of Nine in a series and still managed to make it blow.
Yes.
Like, literally the Borg
cube and also was the Riker largest
plot hole ever. Like,
It's not like Seven of Nine brought a lot to Voyager either. She was just A biped tapping a panel in Astrometrics.
Yeah.
Like, really?
she was the boob factor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, literally, they brought
but
her in.
Dude,
the ratings were low.
Richard, you and I, and probably Chris and Ragnar. Did you guys all ever go to the Trek Setra Museum when it was in Vulcan?
Oh yeah.
So you saw the burgundy 7 of 9 outfit.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That woman was tiny.
Oh yeah.
Tiny, even with the boobs. I bet you she weighed 90 pounds soaking wet.
Same with Janeway.
Yeah.
Her uniform was really tiny too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most actors are. Like most modern Hollywood actors, they're all quite tiny people.
Yeah.
Well, the camera adds 10 pounds, and every time I get a picture taken, there's like 40 cameras pointing
yep.
at me. So a lot of extra pounds, you know what I'm saying?
Me too. Yeah. It's funny, like, to go off on a tangent, I went to babysit my nephews and my niece this afternoon with my wife for a little bit, and I turned it on to the Sci-Fi Channel. Well, I guess CTV Sci-Fi Channel or whatever, just because Voyager was on, right? I was just putting something on the TV, just because. And it was that episode from season one of Voyager where they find that little wormhole and they make contact with that Romulan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so anyway, when we switch to that channel, it's the scene where Janeway's talking to him and she's like in her jammies and she's talking to him in her quarters. My God, she was beautiful. Like, she was like Crystal's like, what are you watching? Is this like a soap opera? Because she's wearing like the silk, nighty that like was like skin tight. And I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot like how pretty she was. And like, man, that was like, that's pretty racy, you know, even by today's standards. That's like, whoa, like that's, you know. But yeah, no, she was quite an attractive woman back then. And she had her hair down and everything, and I was like, wow. I totally forgot about that.
Well, you know what? That's a good point. One of the things that I really know, I just finished Voyager like a week ago. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really noticed with Kate Mulgrew is depending on what they do with her hair, really has a huge effect on like just everything overall.
Yep.
The last couple seasons, she was smoking. Compared to, I didn't like the hair pulled back thing. That was
I never understood how she did
not
that.
Not great.
I figured it must be like a she puts her head in a replicator or something and it like does it for her
like on the Jetsons.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But Richard, what are your thoughts on?
I already know because I've read some really good books called Star Trek Titan.
Nice.
The USS Titan Captains by William T. Riker with Deanna Troi along with all of their crew as eclectic as they were would have been a hell of a good show. I think if it would have been done in what we now call old Trek style,
yeah,
a hell of a good show. But if they do it now, it's going to be a new Trek and it's going to be quote unquote woke, and that would be bad.
Yeah, and Tuvok was on Titan, right?
I think he was the security officer. I think you're right. It's been a while, but I believe you're right.
I think so. Curtis, your thoughts on
Well, we've gone on some tangents. I'm ashamed to admit I'm having difficulty recalling the exact phrasing of the question. So
if I could please
have it again, that would be much appreciated.
If done properly, unlike Star Trek Picard, what character would you want to see further explored in a movie or TV miniseries?
Oof, that's a tough choice. A strong contender, I'll just go with that, a very strong contender would be Harry Kim. His very first assignment right out of the academy was Voyager. And then he spent 7 years seeing all kinds of shit that nobody else in Starfleet has ever even thought of. Mm-hmm. The guy's a duplicate of himself, for Christ's sakes. Who else in Starfleet can say that? Other than Thomas Riker, I guess.
I was just going to yeah. say.
And before.
I guess, yeah, that sort of counts. That's right. But that happens after, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I'd be interested to see where Harry Kim goes. You know, I bet you he takes Tom Paris as a first officer. I'd love to see the two of them in action again, personally. I don't know, because they're still in a starship. You can't really take Data because, you know, he ends up teaching at Cambridge?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, Data ends up just being a professor somewhere. I don't know. I feel like Picard had his moment and not the rest of it. But Harry Kim, you know, he's at the start of his career. Young ensign. Hopefully he gets promoted shortly after returning to Federation space. You got to think that he, like, would have a very unique approach to solving whatever the heck problems would confront a Starfleet captain.
And you know what's strange? Like, to go on a tangent.
Plus, Garrett Wong is super friendly, so I'm partial to
him. Yeah, he's great. But to go on a tangent, on your tangent, isn't it strange how Harry Kim is straight out of the Academy and he's a senior officer on Voyager?
He kind of commented on that himself.
And he's an ensign. Like, I mean, I always assumed it was because maybe he was, like, valedictorian of his graduating class. Like, he was just that good that Janeway was like, you know what? You know, I'm going to make him my operations officer.
I think he was the top of his class, wasn't he?
I can't remember, but it's just strange for, like, an ensign to be, you know, in the, you know, senior command, right? Like, especially when they did that episode on Next Generation Lower Decks, where you saw all the ensigns and stuff just straight out of the Academy, how they're, you know, trying to make it work on the Enterprise.
Well, so here's the thing, though. The Enterprise has, like, 9 times the crew complement of Voyager.
That is true.
There's only 140 people on Voyager, 150, 140, somewhere in there.
Yep.
And so, on a starship, if Star Trek Online is any sort of accurate, you only have so many stations that can be occupied by an officer. Now, the Enterprise has all sorts of departments and way more staff, so you would necessarily have more ensigns, more lieutenants. Mm-hmm. Whereas on Voyager, we only had 2 lieutenants that I know of, Tuvok and Paris. You only had 1 captain, 1 commander. Were there even any lieutenant commanders outside of Tuvok getting promoted in season 6 or 7?
I don't think so.
And that's why Harry Kim didn't get promoted above ensign, was because there wasn't another post that a lieutenant could occupy.
Well, he could have still kept doing his job and just had a promotion. Like, to me, I just found it strange because, like, okay, so he's Ensign Kim, operations officer. But on the Enterprise, Data's a lieutenant commander in the same position.
Well, that's also the flagship.
He's also been in Starfleet for like 25 years at that point, or 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but on the flagship, you want the best of the best.
I guess that's
Voyager
true.
Is just an intrepid class science
ship. Right? It's just another ship, yeah. Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Voyager really didn't even... That's not even the appropriate ship to send in pursuit of the Maquis, frankly. Like, really.
No, the only reason why they went after is because Tuvok, right? Because Tuvok was her security officer and he was undercover. So, that's true. That is true. All right, Richard. If you don't mind closing us off here in our journey to Tangent Town, do you have a question for us, sir?
Yes. My final question is... is an overall question. It's not necessarily about any series or anything specific like that. However, the question is this. How has Star Trek as a whole affected you in your everyday life and or your life in general?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Excellent. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
Okay, well, this is a really easy one for me because 3 months ago, I was offered and accepted the second-in-command position of my squad at work, and a lot of the things in Star Trek that we learned about command and about having people that work under you and your responsibilities toward them and how to conduct yourself have really been instrumental in determining my own personal professional conduct at work. Data in particular, I sort of take a lot of cues from when he taught Worf what it means to be second in command. That's me now. So I really got to hold on to that. And, you know, when you put yourself, when you find yourself in a situation similar to what you might encounter on the show, it gives you an opportunity to start to consider, like, okay, what actually was this character getting at? And is that really relevant? And a lot of the times I find that, yeah, they were pretty on point with how their structures of command work and how just, you know, duty and responsibility tie into everything else. And I found it really inspiring sometimes and influential in the way that I approach problems and deal with them. I take a lot of my cues from a lot of the scenes in Star Trek that resonated with me personally prior to having taken this position.
Mm-hmm. I just want to jump in because I completely agree with Curtis. I feel exactly the same way in regards to, you know, Roddenberry / Berman Trek, not the new Trek, because the way they treat people on the new Trek shows is terrible. It's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be woke or whatever. But it's not. It's mean. It's you know, like for example, sorry to go off on a tangent, but you got the first episode with Barclay and TNG, and then you got that episode that from the Trek shorts with that guy that makes the tribbles, and they basically call him stupid and they treat him like shit and everything, but on the Barclay episode, you got Picard, you know, trying to work with him, trying to utilize Barclay to the best of his abilities and accept him for who he is. Whereas modern Star Trek doesn't do that. But yeah, I take a lot of my cues on not just how I conduct myself at work, but how I conduct myself, you know, with my personal relationships. You know, like treating people with respect. You know, like I remember
Leadership is relationships. Really.
Oh yeah.
So it's
but pretty
much one and the same.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more of like, you know, at home, you know, friendships, that sort of thing. You know, like I look at you know, like Bashir and O'Brien's friendship, or Data and Geordi. You know, you can have different people with different backgrounds and still be friends, and, you know, you treat people with respect. Like, that's, you know, I think one of the greatest lessons from Star Trek. And I know, like, with my mom, you know, I was one of those kids growing up. I used to, you know, kids back in the day, we used to have, you know, VHS. We had to record shows on videotapes. And I used to record Star Trek and rewatch it, you know, all the time. And my mom, she said she didn't mind that because she preferred I watch a show like Star Trek versus some other type of shows. Because Star Trek was positive. It was a good show for me. It taught me lessons. And she didn't mind that. She's like, you know, I like that you like Star Trek, and, you know, I'm okay with it because, you know, it's teaching you, you know, positivity, you know. And I just think that's sorely missing in new Star Trek. You know, like they've Star Trek now is being run by people that don't understand Star Trek. It should be a positive vision of the future. Like, we got enough dystopian futures out there. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a good dystopian future show, you know, like, you know, Westworld. I really liked Westworld. I like stuff like that, but not in my Star Trek. Star Trek should be positive. You know, like, yes, bad things happen. Yes, they have, you know, they have to, you know, they come up against, you know, a war or, you know, chain of command, you know, where they're, you know, being tortured. They go, you know, but they rise above it and do good, right?
Well, that's it. Star Trek's not about what happens to them. It's how they deal with it.
Exactly.
How they respond.
And it's, and, you know, even when the characters, you know, like the Deep Space Nine episode, when O'Brien, you know, remembers being in prison for like 40 years and then he's going to contemplating suicide because he's having a hard time dealing with it. You know, like that's very powerful stuff. And they used to do it in such a way that it would make you think and good would come from it. You know, like O'Brien dealt with his pain and his suffering and became a better person because of it. Yeah, I just wish modern Star Trek was like that. But yeah, as far as, you know, taking lessons from Star Trek, and I agree with Curtis, you know, like I cite that, you know, I use Star Trek as an example for a lot of things in my life. And I really do think it's made me a better person. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir.
Well, first off, got to throw out a shout-out to you guys. Star Trek has brought you all into my life and made me become mm-hmm. friends with all of you. During this awful pandemic shutdown, this podcast is definitely a highlight for me. It'd be better if we were all sitting around in person, around a table with real beers together. Yeah, that'd be awesome. But talking to you all over Skype about Star Trek is been really, really great for my mental and emotional health right now. And then, you know, Star Trek brought me as a kid closer to my grandfather, and as a kid and then into an adult closer with my mother. So I'm always going to be thankful for that. And I actually think that growing up as a kid, especially with Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but really with all Star Trek, it really helped prevent me from becoming racist. Seeing people like Worf and Sisko and Geordi LaForge and Lieutenant Uhura, I didn't think that black people were any different from white people. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about as a kid, where things are really simple, right? And growing up where I did, in the parts of Edmonton that I grew up in, I didn't know very many people of different skin colors or just different ethnicities. But when I did eventually meet them, I didn't care. It just was like, no, this is a person. Like, didn't see anything different. And I actually think part of that could have been from watching Star Trek and seeing and identifying with characters like that. Like, when I was a kid and me and my other friends would play Star Trek, you know how kids will play games based on TV shows that they like.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be Worf. I didn't think anything of it. But, you know, I think experiences like that probably helped me to become more open-minded and tolerant of others. So I think Star Trek's been a very positive force in my life.
Yep. Absolutely. Completely agree. And kudos to Gene Roddenberry. Like, I mean, it goes all the way back to the original series. You know, like, he's like, you know, he's got Mr. Sulu, he's got Uhura, he's got, you know, Chekhov, who's a Russian, he's got Scotty, who's Scottish, from Scotland, McCoy and Kirk are, you know, American, and, you know, Spock's an alien, you know, and yet they all work together and it's not an issue, you know, like they're just people that work together. And yeah, like that's, yeah, it's not, I don't want to say subconsciously, but it's just so become so ingrained in who I am that I don't like you said, Ragnar, I don't even think of that when I meet people that are not the same as me. They're just people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Star Trek definitely played a big part in that. And like I said, kudos to Roddenberry, because that, you know, that's something he pushed for big time.
Yep. Yeah. And he would have caught, back in the day, he would have caught lots of flack for that.
Yeah. And I really think nowadays he would be giving these new Star Trek people a lot of flack for what they're doing.
Boy, I sure would be curious to hear what he would have to say.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Richard, your thoughts, sir.
Well, for me, it's both. So there's everyday life, and then there's overall sort of like affecting how my life is. And in my everyday life, similar to Curtis, I had been on the particular squad he was talking about a long time. And I was essentially in the 2IC role until I transferred to a different squad, different training, things like that. And I used the skills in leadership and seeing how, you know, William Riker reacted as a first officer. He was number one. And so I kind of took that into my everyday life in that way. But also in my general life, it really affected how I valued intelligence and science, astrophysics, and everything like that. And when I was young, I didn't know a lot about it until I was 8 when I first started watching Star Trek. And then my mom had met somebody. They were together for a very long time, 10, 12 years. But he was sort of he pushed that in a healthy way. He had all of Star Trek, TNG, all of Deep Space Nine on VHS. He went out of his way and recorded everything because he was, you know, essentially a nerd, just like we are. And so he valued intelligence and he valued honesty and a lot of the characteristics that you learn from Star Trek. And that was how it affected my life, is like intelligence, my love of like space, potential quote unquote extraterrestrial life. That's a complicated subject. We're not going to touch that today. But just in general, you know, it affected who I am as I grew up and trying to be the best person I can be. And, you know, being intelligent as much as I can, given, you know, my own limitations.
Excellent. And like Ragnar said, I mean, it's brought us all together. You know, my love of Star Trek has, you know, brought all of you guys into my life, you know. And, you know, here we are.
A long-ass drive to Vulcan from your place, homie.
Yeah, it's...
Had to be a pretty powerful motivator.
Yeah, it was worth it, though. It, great time, you know. And it's not just you guys. Like, I've met a lot of, you know, a lot of people from Vulcan and, you know, convention regulars. And you know, even if it was a one-off, you know, I remember the first year I went, I sat with a couple. I've never seen them since, but, you know, man, we had a good visit, you know, like at the dinner table. And it was a great experience. And yeah, Star Trek. And honestly, I think Star Trek, if it wasn't for Star Trek, I don't think science fiction fandom would be what it is today.
No.
Yeah. Like it really was the Star Trek conventions that started this whole, you know, con thing. Right. So, and here we are.
It's hard to imagine what sci-fi would have been like without Star Trek. I'm sure there still would have been some, but boy, sure would have been different. You know, in a lot of ways. Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think Star Trek is the archetype for science fiction, at least for a televised series.
Oh, yeah. Like, especially, like, even something like that's a little bit older, like Doctor Who, I really think if they hadn't done, like, Star Trek The Next Generation, they never would have brought Doctor Who back. You know, yeah. it would have just died, too. Like, it was not viable, right? But then they looked at Next Gen and was like, whoa, you know, like, it worked for Star Trek, it'll probably work for us, and boom, they're back. But anywho.
Well, and I defy anyone to tell me that our modern touch screens that are everywhere these days didn't have something to do with Star Trek. Somebody got inspired from that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's crazy when you think of, you know, even 20 years ago, you know, like you say, the touchscreen, that was science fiction. And now, like, I'm reading my comic books on touchscreen, you know, like, it's crazy. And we were just talking about this the other day at work. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, like, they were saying, like, one day, you know, we're going to have phones where we can actually see each other, just like on Star Trek. And it's funny, like, I have that technology, but I never do FaceTime with people. It's like, I don't want to look at people when I'm talking, you know, unless I absolutely have to. I know I recorded a podcast here recently with Richard, because he's a friend of the podcast. Not Richard that's on tonight, a different Richard, Richard Reeder. And he's trying to launch a new podcast, but he wanted to record via FaceTime. Well, Skype, but he wanted to use the video. And at first, it was really off-putting. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's weird seeing you and us talking. I got used to it. But it's just funny. Like, when I was a kid, that was science fiction. That did not exist. And now it does. It's crazy. I'm still waiting for my holodeck. You know, my holodeck and my transporter. I'd love to be able to beam to Paris. Not that I want to go to Paris specifically, but just be like, hey, today, you know what?
Just to know you could.
Yeah, I'm going to go check out the Eiffel Tower today. I'm going to go do that. And then I'll be home in time for supper. That'd be so awesome. But anyway.
The Eiffel Tower is actually really cool in person.
You've seen it?
Hell yeah, I've been in many places in Europe. I've done a lot of traveling in my day.
Nice.
France,
yeah. France is cool.
Great food. Great food there.
Oh, hell yeah. Good food.
The bread. Just the bread there.
Right? Oh, just European bread in general, dude. Just
baby.
Yeah. Well, now you guys have given me an idea. Let's do a travel episode. Because I've been to Germany. I've been to Mexico. I've been to Alaska.
I've been to New Orleans. And...
yeah, like we should do... like, Curtis, where have you been?
I've been to...
I know Vegas for sure.
The Netherlands, actually. I went to Amsterdam and the Canary Islands in the same trip.
Nice. All right.
And Vegas for a convention.
All right, that's it. We're going to be doing a travel-themed episode here in the next couple months with the Deep Space Nine discussion panel. Because, yeah, it'd be a good topic. But anyway, that was a tangent in itself. But let's get back to... this tangent episode, and let's call it an episode. I think we've covered a lot of good questions, and it was a lot of fun. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Curtis, can I find you anywhere, or you're still incognito?
Not currently. Not unless you play World of Warcraft. Then you can find me. But if you don't, I'm not really anywhere.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Richard, where can we find you, sir?
Much the same. I don't currently play World of Warcraft, but I play Sea of Thieves, and if you want to sail the great seas with me, feel free.
Excellent. And Ragnar, where can we find you, good sir?
Well, I'm on as Ragnar the Trader. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, RagnarTheTrader.com, or search Ragnar the Trader on Etsy. Those are the four main places you'll find me on the internet.
And excellent. I can give you a personal testimony. The girls really love the Ragnar the Trader beard shampoo and beard oil.
Nice.
I can't get enough.
The salty dog?
Yeah, man.
That's the fucking stuff.
I love that stuff. That's so my favorite.
Good. Excellent.
Oh, I am biased, but it is also my favorite.
I hope so.
As for myself, you can check out my blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com, and I am here doing the Pop Culture Pub episodes. And we have one coming up in a couple days. We're recording. We're talking about breakfast cereals. So the last few days I've been eating a lot of different breakfast cereals in preparation for this groundbreaking topic. So that will be coming very shortly. And as for the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, our next episode, we're going to be discussing Season 7.0. So the first 13 episodes of Season 7, assuming there's no technical difficulties, because you never know with this podcast. It happens. All right. So on behalf of myself, Curtis Holloway, Richard Szabo, and Ragnar the Traitor, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub. This was the Deep Space Nine discussion panel, and thank you for coming with us on our trip to Tangent Town.